Welcome, everyone. This is All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast 173, Wednesday the 9th of March. There's no music, as people have noticed, when Rafe's not here, because the music's all at his end. Sorry about that. I could put on some random iTunes music, but hey-ho. With me, instead of Rafe Blandford, who is away travelling again, we have another stand-in. This very popular series of stand-ins. We have Matt Lissy. Hi there, Matt.
Hi, Steve.
Tell us a bit about yourself, sort of roughly how old you are, what you do for a living.
I am 37, so approaching middle age, as my wife likes to point out. I for the most of the last 5 years, I've been a freelance Windows Phone, Windows 10, Windows 8 app developer, working on all sorts of apps I'm not allowed to talk about.
Making you eminently qualified to answer all those technical questions I can fire at you in the next half hour.
I can give you the developer perspective, yes.
So tell us how you've been getting on with Windows 10 Mobile, and I presume, being a developer, you've got multiple devices. And there are multiple different versions of the OS. Let's start with the one that was a release yesterday, Windows 10 Mobile 10586. That's the threshold branch, i.e. the classic Windows 10 branch that we're going out to most devices. Build 164 was released. No major change log, but how have you found that over the last 24 hours?
So I only installed it this afternoon. I haven't had the chance to find anything new in it at all. I know the logs say that there was just some improvements, and I clicked through on the details, and it took me to some generic information about Windows 10, which wasn't particularly informative, but it all looks good so far. I haven't spotted any differences, to be honest.
Yeah, they did say it was very similar to build 1.2.2, which came out about a week ago. So how did you get on with 1.2.2?
Again, Windows 10 Mobile has been fine for me. I remember the very, very, very early days I got exposed to it before the insiders existed. And so my experience is slightly marred by just the history of having seen it at such a raw stage. And, you know, I know a lot of listeners have been critical of the insider program in those early days, but you don't know how bad it was.
Well, I do, because I was there as well. Yeah, the 950, I have to say, that's my main device at the moment, has been pretty stable on the latest builds. Now that I sorted out the battery life problem, you probably saw my Flow story, finding out that Mail, Outlook, Mail and Calendar was sucking up 65% of my battery power during the day. And just by taking my Gmail sync in particular off as emails arrived every 15 minutes, it radically fixed my 950 in one fell swoop. Did any of that ring a bell for you?
So I, for productivity reasons, I stopped having all my email go to my phones. It's just too much. I can't cope. That's what several hundred emails a day just makes it a bit unworkable.
Well, don't install Instagram, or and just be glad we haven't got Snapchat, I guess. Otherwise, you really would be distracted.
I have other phones with Snapchat on, but yeah, I'm not popular enough to be distracted in that way.
What about your family? Do they sort of give you a wry smile when they see you standardising on sort of Windows Phone and Windows 10 Mobile? Have they all got iPhones?
So my wife has had a Windows Phone for 3 or 4 years. She's been through three, I think. She really likes it. She has a Surface as well. I don't even have a Surface, but she's really likes it. My son is 10, and he's perfectly happy with a 1520 because all he does is watch YouTube and play Minecraft. And my daughter spends most of her time focusing on the iPad, watching iPlayer. So
yeah,
they're very happy. You know, my son likes to point out I have a drawer with 20 odd phones in it, and he thinks that's exciting.
But. Yeah, and they as usual, the family kind of get the cast offs. In my case, they've rejected my cast offs, and they've all gone to the dark side. But there we go. which is your main device at the moment?
My main, I have four main devices at the moment, if that's allowed.
Go on, no, it's not. Which is your primary main device that your wife phones you on?
So my main SIM is still in a 930.
Yeah, yeah. No. Did you see my piece about a month ago where I was kind of talking slightly tongue-in-cheek, that saying that the Lumia 930, you know, has an awful lot to recommend it, and there are some four or five aspects in which it actually outguns and outperforms and kind of feels better than the newer devices. Did that ring a bell?
There's a definite quality of build difference, I think, between that and the 950, even though they were sort of comparable in price. So the 950 XL is what I have, and yeah, I'm perfectly happy with the 930. There isn't, if I didn't have to have a 950 for the purposes of development, I wouldn't have bought it. I'd be perfectly happy with a 930, although I'm starting to have what I think are probably battery issues with it, just yeah. As an old and overused device.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems with the 930 I found was that it gets hot, either when you're charging it, for example, when you're using it heavily playing games, and if you're trying to charge it while playing games, then you basically can't hold it because it's literally too hot to hold.
I have noticed that in the past. Maybe it's just my usage has changed, but I haven't noticed that so much.
You need to play more games.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the night, coming home on the train, playing games with a portable charger plugged into it. Yeah, it used to get hot then. And there were times I noticed it getting hot in my pocket as well. But that's
yeah. The other reason I would perhaps end up going for the 950 or 950 XL over the 930, much as I love the 930, is the fact that the camera is quite a bit better. I did a shootout 930, 950, and 1020. Are you sort of much of an imaging fan, or does this pass you by?
I'm not much of an imaging fan, but I tend to use my 6 Plus for images when I'm taking photos.
You're not talking about an iPhone here, are you?
Yes, I have an iPhone. And just the no configuration, not really knowing what I'm doing, taking photos, take it out, point and click, the images I get out of it are better than my 930.
So the iPhone 6 Plus is a backup device then for you?
it's probably my second device of the four, yes.
Do you honestly carry all four around with you?
They will definitely be in my bag. I went out today with just my coat and I had three in my pocket. Yeah,
that's pretty sad. I thought I was bad. I go around with two in different pockets, but I guess you're a developer. You've always got the excuse. You could be fiddling around testing an application on that third phone. So,
well, I try and argue that I'm a mobile developer first, and while I've specialised in Windows Phone, there's a commercial and business interest that I need to be aware of what happens on the iPhone and with Android and with different variations of Windows and Windows Phone. Yeah. So that's my reason for having lots of devices.
Have you been following the whole saga of my estimates of how many of the existing Windows Phone 8 users will actually end up upgrading to Windows 10? I mean, I did some back of the envelope calculations last week, and both basing on the older S4 devices and then the new sort of Snapdragon 400, 800 devices, I reckon that counting all of them combined over the next 3 months, we should be seeing somewhere around 30% adoption to Windows 10. Do you think that's too high, too low?
I think the number of terms, the number of devices which will be upgraded, that sounds about right. You know, your figures aren't wildly out there. I think that that's probably going to be over at least 6 months. So I had a look back at the adoption for Windows Phone 8 to 8.1, and that took a year to get to 70% with 8.1 market share. So that's it's quite slow uptake, and traditionally the rate at which devices have been able to be upgraded around the world has been very slow. So I think, you know, 30% might be reasonable for upgrades, but it's going to be at least 6 months before we see that.
Yeah. My theory, of course, by limiting it to, say, 30%, was that there would be an awful lot of either phones which are no longer used or no longer used actively, or which, with the older processors, either won't be pushed the update by Microsoft, or the users themselves will actively choose not to upgrade because their disks are full, or because they think that the new OS will run too slowly. In other words, there are a huge number of variables involved, and a lot of them mitigate against people actually doing the upgrade, I think.
I think a lot of people will be put off doing the upgrade because there isn't a strong advantage for doing it, I don't see. While Windows 10 is great, if you've got a Windows phone or device running Windows Phone 8 or 8.1, there isn't a strong incentive to upgrade, I don't think, for the general consumer.
Yeah, the subtext of my article was that if you're currently a normal user using Windows Phone 8.1 at this point, let's say on a Lumia 830 or something, take an example, and you're well aware that it hasn't got all sorts of applications, but you're happy. You presumably, if you're still using it at this point in time in March 2016, you're basically happy with what it does for you. So as you say, why on earth would you want to rock the boat and give it a whole new OS and a whole new sort of app possible incompatibilities and a whole area of question marks? I just think it doesn't make sense for that sort of regular user.
Yeah, I know Microsoft like to tote that it's a free upgrade, but I think that the risks of, well, what happens if it goes wrong? What if something stops working? How do I get support if there are problems? They kind of outweigh the potential for, oh, it's a new OS.
Yeah, I think what will happen is that they will roll it out over select devices and select variants and select regions, see how it goes, and Microsoft will very much feel the way. At some point, of course, there'll come the point where we're late enough into 2016 that they think, well, okay, let's just not bother pushing it to the old devices, because we're talking about devices, phones, which are 2 to 3 years old, those people aren't going to be looking for the update, and if they really want it, they can have insiders anyway. So I don't think it's going to be a full program. I think I'll be very surprised if even more than 50% of the devices out there actually had the update made available to them, which is probably sensible in the long run.
Yeah, I know that there was originally an intent that the device would be available for, or the upgrade would be available for every device, but it just feels more and more unrealistic as time goes on.
Yeah, have you got any of the old S4-based devices still in use?
I have lots of devices. I don't know what processors they run, to be honest.
The ones with 20 at the end, 920, 925, 1020.
Yes, I've got a bunch of them.
Yeah, have you tried Windows 10 on those?
I think I have it on the 625. Does that count?
Yeah, it counts. Yeah, it counts, yeah.
I honestly have so many devices. I do have a spreadsheet I use to keep track of what's on what. I'll just quickly bring it up. And
That's a first. Oh, question. I do have a secondary theory or a tertiary theory, depending on how many theories in your counting, and is that the lower spec devices, things like the 620, 625, the 630, because they've got a lower resolution screen and there's a lot less power needed to drive the displays, and then actually the performance actually isn't too bad. And also the sort of people who use those lower-end devices aren't that demanding. It's people, for example, Lumia 1020 fans who want to have their cake and eat it. They want to have all the 1020's wonderful features and Windows 10 Mobile, and they're kind of, you can't have both at this point. If you go for Windows 10 Mobile, you end up with a slower phone that doesn't quite work with all the different imaging features. If you stay on Windows 8.1, you've got the great imaging features, but you haven't got all the bells and whistles of 10.1. Whereas the lower spec devices, I think there's less expectations, and everything will just, it might even work.
It's a good argument, yeah.
We've got a list of different flows and news stories from the week just to run through. Instagram, I would like to say it came out for Windows 10 Mobile and Windows Phone. In actual fact, it is a universal Windows program, UWP, but it's still labeled as beta. When are Instagram going to finally pull some weasel word out of the title of their own application on our platform? It's getting rather frustrating. Have you tried Instagram beta?
I haven't tried the new Instagram beta, but yeah, I do think beta is definitely a weasel word. It's an excuse for not having to fix bugs, or there being bugs, or any issues someone might come across, and it's an excuse not to fully commit as well.
Yeah, I blame Google. They had Google Maps in beta, and Gmail was in beta for about 8 years, wasn't it?
Yeah, 10 years, I think. But yes, definitely, it was. I used to like to say that beta should really be flagged as should be better, but
indeed. I mentioned it's a universal Windows program. This is kind of something we talked about in the last couple of podcasts, but as a developer, maybe you can give us the gospel truth. We have the concept of a universal Windows program that, yes, can potentially run on phone, tablet and desktop, laptop, etc. But in terms of the behavior on the phone, does the fact that it's universal, how likely is it therefore going to work with Continuum, and how likely is it you can dismiss the virtual controls? In other words, do all these things go hand in hand, or are they all very much up to the individual developers to enable?
So with a UWP Windows or Windows 10 app which runs on the phone, it should get support for Continuum. You have to actually actively opt out of that from a development side. Mm. So the reason you'd see so many apps which don't work with Continuum is because they're still the Silverlight or the old Universal Windows format, which doesn't work with Continuum.
So there are two different universal formats.
So when 8.1 came out for phone and for Windows, it was called Windows Universal, but it was, you know, you still had to build separate versions for the phone and for big Windows. And then they introduced Universal Windows just to reverse it and confuse everyone. They said you can build one package which runs everywhere. And to further confuse it, Apple used to have a thing called Universal Apps, which ran on iPhone and iPad, but they've stopped that. So the three universals, and depending on how you define universal, they're not universal anyway.
Well, and I think I brought you on the podcast to clarify the situation. Oh dear. Anyway, I did notice that the new Instagram beta or preview, whatever it's called, the thinking is that it was an Islandwood port over from the iOS code, because it looks very, very different to anything we've seen on Windows before. Does that sound about right?
It's certainly possible. There's also a theory that it's something else as well. So Facebook have their own internal project for building cross-platform applications which genuinely run on iPhone, Android, Windows, and anything else they might imagine. And there's rumours that it might be built with that, but I don't know if that's the case. I think that's probably the first app that actually comes out with it, but it would certainly explain why it looks more like the iOS version.
Yeah, kind of like their own middleware. I did see some rumoured or leaked screenshots of Facebook Messenger, a universal Windows application that Facebook were building there, and that would kind of tie in, yeah.
That's certainly a possibility, but you know, with all these terms flying around, it's important to notice that an Islandwood app is a UWP. Yeah. So Islandwood is just a way of taking Objective-C code, which is what most Apple and iPhone apps are written in, and building a UWP with them. It's not some kind of magic separate project. It's basically just a different compiler and some shims to sit between the different differences in the SDKs.
I mentioned before that some universal Windows programs let you dismiss the virtual controls so you can have more screen real estate on the modern devices, and some don't. Is there kind of any rhyme or reason here, and would applications let you dismiss the controls?
I don't think that the tools you use to build it control that, to be honest. I don't know specifically how you limit that or not. I suspect it's probably... No, I don't know. Pass.
It's probably down to the developers when they're actually writing the code for the program, because part of the program code has to detect when the screen display resolution changes during the application's runtime, and to refresh the screen and redraw the screen. So maybe that really is down to the individual developers when they're writing the app. So Matt, we had an article, guest article, written by Alvin Wong a couple of days ago on the site. The first, he used to write for Unleash the Phones back in the day, if you remember that site, but a very, very eloquent writer, and based in Singapore. And he wrote a fairly hard-hitting editorial pointing out the current reality of Windows 10, Windows 10 Mobile and Windows Phone, and that in large parts of the world, you can go into phone shops and network websites, and there's just zero presence for the devices. I mean, I've made the UK where you and I live, maybe we're a kind of a bubble because we still have about 10% market share, but it's a pretty dire state of affairs across the world. Are you pessimistic for the future, optimistic? Any thoughts?
So I read this with interest, and it was interesting to get the different perspective, but then something someone mentioned to me yesterday, kind of the two struck together and made me go, oh, hang on a minute. And what someone pointed out to me is Microsoft have done no advertising of the 550, 950 or the 650 anywhere in the world. You can buy them, but there's going to be no adverts for it.
Is that an official line or just an observation?
It's an observation, but I've yet to find any adverts for it. But it's based on that. You know, if people are aware of them, or you know, I would be interested in that. But it kind of feels like, well, if Microsoft aren't even promoting the phones, what do they really think of it?
They are promoting Continuum and mentioning the 950 and 950 XL as part of that vision there, because I've seen numerous promotional videos on the Microsoft YouTube channels. And admittedly, they're not adverts and promos for the phone per se, but the phone is mentioned very much in the same breath as Continuum and laptops and Surface Pros and so on.
That's a good point. And what I think that points to is that Microsoft's focus for Windows 10 Mobile is going to be to the enterprise, where Continuum makes more sense, and where they're pushing this mobile desktop scenario or this hot desking vision of the future.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I've also got this theory at the back of my mind, and I've mentioned it a few times on various podcasts, is that Microsoft, at the back of its mind, it knows full well that Windows 10 Mobile isn't done yet. It knows full well that they haven't actually finished the OS. They haven't ruled out all the bugs and polished all the rough edges, which is why we're still in the insiders phase, which is why they haven't pushed it to a single retail mainstream Windows Phone 8 device, which is why the 959 50XL are still getting firmware updates. They're still getting push production updates. So over four months after they first appeared on shop shelves. So I think Microsoft secretly knows full well that this OS isn't quite baked yet. And they're reluctant, you know, to push it in a big way in case people see the promos, see adverts, buy it, and then get very disappointed.
So I knew bringing this up, I might be come across as quite pessimistic, but I'm glad you've brought that positive view back. And yes, let's just keep our fingers crossed that maybe, you know, there's good time still to come.
Yeah, well, as I keep saying to Rafe and others, Windows 10 is a much bigger ecosystem than Windows Phone ever was. Windows Phone 8 Windows Phone itself is dead now. Long live Windows 10, and Windows 10 Mobile is part of that vision. And there are now something like a quarter of a billion Windows 10 computers out there, if you include the laptops, hybrids, tablets, Xboxes, and of course phones. The new phones make a very tiny percentage, but they are part of it, and hopefully a growing percentage. But they're all part of a larger vision, a larger ecosystem. And as a developer yourself, you must be kind of half excited that you'll be in a year's time, 2 years time, you'll be writing all sorts of Windows 10 universal applications that you know full well are being used on all form factors, including phones potentially.
Yeah, the broad appeal of Windows 10 across all devices, and I think the last figure I heard was 350 million, so it's 100 million more than you've been hearing. Maybe I'm hearing insider figures, I don't know. And that's definitely appealing, and that's good. From the phone perspective, that some new OEMs have just come out and said, we're building some devices too, so the HP and Huawei, MWC announced devices, that's encouraging for the platform as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we just established that Windows 10 has gained 100 million devices in the last 40 seconds, which is a pretty impressive adoption rate. No, I'm just kidding. I put a story up on the site. I've been doing some DIY here on my various phones. I'm sure Microsoft PR will be appalled that I'm taking their loan devices apart. But and you've got the 950 XL, which I haven't had any problems with in terms of the camera and video capture and so forth. But on the 950, you might want to just check out the story now and look at the photograph. But one of the microphones, or both microphones, are protected by a little rubber seal. Sits on top of a sort of plastic membrane with a sticky membrane. And these phones, they do get warm, they do get hot, and the glue melts slightly, and then the rubber seal slips. And the rubber seal slips on one of the microphones, the 950, to cover the microphone hole, which is a complete shooting yourself in the foot moment. So, any thoughts on that? you mentioned the build quality and design of these devices. It really could have been slightly better. Couldn't it?
It does look like a design flaw. Yes, I've got your image in front of me right now, and it's it would be concerning. It's the kind of thing I can see devices going back to the store for, because people wouldn't take their phone apart like you have and identify which little thing has slipped. So I think that.
We mentioned the 930. I've taken my 930 apart numerous times, not least because the Qi charging stopped working properly. Admittedly, that might have stopped working properly because I took it apart in the first place, but let's not go there. Of all the different Lumias you've held over the last 2-3 years, which were the sort of maybe the top two in terms of hardware design and construction for you?
So I still remember the first time I held the, I want to say 800 at Lumia, Nokia World. Was it Nokia World?
Yeah, where they 2012, it? I think it was. Yeah.
So in Excel. And I couldn't put the thing down. It just felt so nice in my hand. I mean, now it's tiny and it's a bit plasticky, but that left a definite impression on me at the time. I really liked the 820, and I had that for a long time until someone at Nokia said, why on earth have you still got that here? Take a 1020. But that was just a great device. It did everything I needed and did it well. Or it did everything I wanted and it did it well. And then the 930 for the last 2 years has been a great device for me. So those are the three which really stick out, I think.
Yeah, I'd actually say that the 950 is a follow-on from the 820 in terms of the sort of size, positioning, the fact that the back comes off, you replace the battery, the AMOLED screen. It's slightly more expensive than the 820 was, I think, but certainly in terms of the feel in the hand and positioning, I would say that 950 is probably the closest to modern equivalent to that old 820 for you.
It feels a bit bigger than the old 820, but
yeah, well, you've got the XL. Yeah. I'm talking about the regular 950. Anyway, yeah. By the way, why didn't you say hello at Nokia World 2012? I was there. We had a little stand, Rafe, you and David and I.
I remember very little about that event now. I remember some dance group being there on the second day, which was very weird. Diversity or something, they got up and did a dance at the beginning. It was very strange to see that happening in front of all these suits.
I actually quite enjoyed Diversity, but I agree it was slightly strange. There was actually a party in the evening. It was rather loud and dancey and showy, and I have to admit I was so completely flaked out after about 8 hours solid during the main show activities that I just retreated to my hotel room after a meal and went to sleep. But it was a good event. That was the last big great Nokia World, wasn't it? I think Nokia, the Nokia brand has never been quite the same since.
No, I think there was a smaller Nokia World in UAE, I think, Dubai, the year after, but it was a much smaller affair. But that was the last big one, yeah.
What goes through your mind when you see the word Nokia now? I was quite shocked, really. I saw Albert included some photographs of a Nokia shop in Singapore in his article, and I think I see the word Nokia, whereas it used to be all positive vibes and positive impressions would flit through my mind, I now see the word Nokia, and it's kind of 50-50. It's a very bittersweet logo and a name to see.
It does just remind me of you know, olden times. Olden times makes me sound really old now. It reminds me of all the great devices I had in the past. It's kind of sad that they're not around anymore. I still don't know how I feel about possible new devices claiming to be Nokias in the future. And MWC last year, to see a massive Nokia sign on their stand was like, but you don't exist. But they kind of still do, but just in a different capacity. It's it just reminds me of former times.
Yeah, if there's one thing I've learned in this industry is that nothing ever stays the same. Things change year on year, and there's absolutely nothing you can do to fix that. And also that the pace of everything is accelerating. I get quite breathless sometimes.
yeah, we have this idea of mobile time, and mobile time is just 50,000 times faster than the speed the rest of the world goes at, isn't it?
And it's also annoying that it's very uneven, that you have this time of year, sort of February, March, April time, you have all of these new flagship devices coming out across the industry. And of course, we've got the huge push to Windows 10 and Windows 10 Mobile, which just seems to be accelerating in its own right, really, in terms of the number of builds. And then we'll get to July or August or so, and everyone will go on holiday for 2 months and nothing will get done and it'll be deathly quiet. So, but at this time of year, I think we're all kind of running around like headless chickens in the media, certainly.
Yeah, there's always things happening, but they get announced at specific times, typically. Don't they? You know, there are always points in the year where you know there are going to be announcements and times it's going to be quiet.
Yeah. When you pick up your iPhone, do you ever feel as if you're betraying Windows 10 or Windows Phone or vice versa?
So I've been in Microsoft offices and had dodgy looks, and I've had people, you know, look at me and go, "Why, you're a Windows Phone guy, why have you got that?" And it's, the ecosystem of mobile is much, much bigger than Windows, and I think it's important to be aware of that. And I know you do things beyond that as well.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Microsoft has now released so many of their apps and services very, very well and well received for Android and iOS, I mean, just speaks to how wide Satya Nadella's vision is. He's clearly, it's not quite throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks, but he's certainly not putting all his eggs in one basket, as I think perhaps Ballmer did and Elop before him.
There's definitely a vision with Microsoft that they're never, with Satya, they appreciate that they're not going to own the phone space. And with that in mind, it's like, right, so we need to be building apps for those other platforms. Brilliant. We can make money if we do. Let's do that.
Yeah. Did you agree with my analogy on the previous podcast that the Lumia 950, 950 XL are very much sort of Microsoft's equivalent of the Nexus line from Google? Did that analogy ring true?
With the Nexus line, they've always felt very high-end, the very best at what you can do, and I don't think that's the case with the 950. I think, you know, if you look at the 950 or 950 XL as, this is the best business phone, and you held up against the HP Elite, that's very much, really high-end, everything to the max, let's build a Windows phone. So in that respect, maybe not. We might get to that point in the future where Microsoft spend less on developing devices, which is the way they're going to go, and they have references for this is a high-end phone. But there's a comparison in principle, but you know, this is an example of what you can build with a platform. But my 950 XL doesn't feel as high-end as my Nexus.
Are you prepared?
Sorry, I've got a Nexus.
Do you think you could hazard a guess, you being kind of half in the business world, at how much this HP Elite's going to cost? I know they're going to sell it through business channels and probably chuck in a few mobile extenders and display docks and all the other stuff, but just the price of an Elite X3 when it comes out in July, maybe even XVAT in the UK, just hazard a guess at the price.
I don't think the price matters. No one's going to buy them, are they?
That's a bit pessimistic.
It's a bit pessimistic.
It's got to be high end, hasn't it? It's got to be sort of £500 or £600 at least.
Yes, but they're going to sell to business in bulk. Yeah, so it'll, I can imagine businesses paying no more than £400 per device.
Yeah, I think they will sell it in bundles as well. They'll say, okay, you get an Elite 3, this sort of laptop extender and a display dock and various cables and adapters. And the whole lot is going to be, £900 a shot or something, but it'll have everything you need for the mobile office. And I think they'll sell it in bundles like that.
That seems a good way to sell them.
Yeah. We do have a letter in, actually, so we always have some nice little readers and listeners' letters. This is from Russ Varley. See if you've got an opinion on this as you're a developer. Russ says, many thanks for the great show. It's always interesting and informative. I have a discussion point for one of the shows that's been niggling me at me for some time, but was finally coalesced by Steve's article about who would buy Windows phones. The question is this: are apps here to stay, or are they an intermediate form of software that will disappear in many cases? My view is that apps will become less and less important over the next 5 to 10 years. While they may not ever vanish entirely, I think the need for dedicated software installed on a device is fading fast. There will be some apps that I think will always be local to the device, such as navigation apps, where a loss of connectivity means losing your navigation. For example, he says, Google Maps new feature to download data acknowledges this need. Russ carries on, the majority of other apps we use, email, social media, shopping, banking and information apps like entertainment guides, can just as easily be served through a mobile optimized website. like this is something I've come back to numerous times in the past, and I'm not entirely sure I was right. I'm not entirely sure Russ is right, but he finishes, in the past, making web pages for small screens involved a lot of work, and from the developer's perspective, felt like duplicated effort. However, mobile responsive design is now a feature of many content management systems, meaning that the time needed to produce a website that works on all screen sizes has reduced enormously. Indeed, many mobile websites are better than their desktop counterparts because they're less cluttered. I think the driver for this transition will be simply be cost. The app economy, says Russ, is now largely driven by businesses of all sizes. At the moment, a business may have a team making the website, another team developing the iOS app, a further team writing an Android app, and may even be a team creating Windows apps. If these multiple teams can be reduced to one creating a really good responsive website, there are huge savings for the company. I'll stop it there. Any thoughts as you're a developer?
So these are issues that have been raised a lot for many, many years. And for a long time, the advice was, well, you start with building a mobile website. Yeah. You start with that because you can use that everywhere. There are three main things that doesn't give you. So it limits what you can do in terms of device capabilities. And there are ways and means that that's slowly changing. It limits discoverability because people don't go looking for mobile websites. They go looking for apps. And it limits monetization options, which in the world of free-to-play and everything being freemium isn't such an issue now because mobile ads on mobile websites are just as good as mobile ads in mobile apps. But those were the three big reasons not to do it. I think that there's been some stats over the last few months I've seen which look at mobile across all platforms, and what they've noticed is that mobile web usage is coming down and mobile app usage is going up because people want apps. They've been trained to know that you get apps on mobile devices. And so, you know, people aren't going to stop building apps and try and build websites when their customers are asking for apps. But so there's that side of it. Sorry, long question, long complicated answer. The argument about writing something multiple times has always been a really good business argument. The reality is that most companies are in this position where they have teams building different things. And while some of the skills for building anything in software are totally transferable, the skills you need to make a really good iOS app or a really good Android app are quite different to the skills you need for building a really good website. And so while you might be able to reduce some of those skills or some of that duplication, there's going to be a level of specialism needed in different areas.
Yeah.
So you could do that, but then companies have already got this investment in all their different teams, and companies are very wary of removing that and stepping back and starting again with these apps that they have, which they've invested hundreds of thousands, millions of pounds in some cases on large teams over many years. They don't want to throw that all away and go, we'll just go to the website now.
Yeah.
So that's tricky. There's also changes in trends within the app space. So we're starting to see a move from everything being dedicated and siloed little apps to more integration. The big trend at the moment is messaging-based interfaces. We had this, you know, in mobile way back in the day when everything was SMS-based. But the idea that you can build apps which integrate with Messenger or WhatsApp or WeChat or anything else, and that's how you interact with it. That's kind of perceived as a way of the future for a lot of cases. They bring up their own issues about monetization and discovery, but there are changes in the industry and within the mobile space about what people are thinking about for the future.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Russ, for the letter. I hope that's more, hope that's answered it, and you made some very good points there, Matt. We're kind of out of time, Matt. We do like to keep the podcast just over the half an hour mark. Where can people find you online?
So online, I have a blog at mrlacey.com. I'm on the Twitters, Mr. Lacey, and I also do some things with our Duplex, such as our monthly stats charts you'd like to comment on.
I can't let you go without asking for you to comment on my comment, which is the fact that I think those stats are slightly skewed, because people like you, me, and every other self-respecting geek reading AWP and listening to this podcast, we basically don't click on ads. In fact, we pay to get rid of the ads almost immediately, and therefore we're not counted in any of the stats with our high-end devices. What say you?
I say that the purpose of the stats is to show that the developers who are using the Duplex network, what the people using the network are using.
Which is, again, a very good answer, very diplomatic. But it does kind of show that you shouldn't take the Duplex stats as absolute gospel in terms of what devices are in use, I suspect.
Yeah, they're not intended to be a a representative sample of the entire network, of the entire device base of Windows Phone devices, but they're actually quite close, is what we're told by Microsoft.
Yeah, I did say in my editorial that they're probably only about 5% off what I think are the truth, and it may even be a lot less than that. So anyway, more power to your elbow, and keep on producing the nice pretty pictures.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on and filling in for Rafe. And hopefully we'll have Mr. Blandford back next week. So I'll let you say goodbye, Matt.
And goodbye, everybody.
And we'll catch you all about windowsphone.com. And thanks for listening.